Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Congressional Democrats made a big show of ethics reform, cleaning up the swamp in Washington, they called it. Well, the House Ethics Committee handed down some new rules today, and guess who's looking for loopholes already? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals at Vanguard.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's the 20th of February, Tuesday today. Great to have you with us. We'll get to that congressional travel story in just a bit, but the corporate story of the day comes to us from a slightly unusual source. The scales of justice tipped heavily toward corporate America today when the Supreme Court handed down a pair of economic rulings. Weyerhaeuser, the timber company, got out from under a $79 million damage award, and the cigarette maker Philip Morris saw a $79.5 million award against it thrown out. Nancy Marshall Ganser has the day's Supreme Court business update.
The court decided Weyerhaeuser wasn't guilty of predatory buying, pushing the price of the logs it needs for its paper and lumber businesses beyond the reach of small lumber mills. As for Philip Morris, the Supreme Court threw out a $79.5 million punitive damages award to an Oregon smoker's widow because the jury included all Oregon smokers in the award. Court watch.
Prevailed and were accepted by the court.
But consumer advocate Ira Reingold thinks the justices are leaning too far toward big business. Reingold says stringent punitive damages are needed to punish bad corporate behavior.
But I think what we're seeing in businesses across the country, they're doing a cost-benefit analysis in terms of their behavior. How close to the line of bad behavior are they going to walk so that they can maximize their profits?
But Quentin Riegel of the National Association of Manufacturers says the Supreme Court is just helping companies defend themselves.
There's been a lot of jackpot justice in this country, and it's because plaintiff's lawyers have been able to introduce evidence that's not really relevant to the case.
Court watchers say it's tough to predict how far the court is tilting toward the business community. They'll just have to stay tuned. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Court watchers might have to wait, but stock watchers got immediate gratification. Shares in both Weyerhaeuser and Philip Morris parent company Altria reacted to the rulings today, down about 0.3% apiece. As of a couple of weeks ago, you stopped being able to find Viacom content on YouTube. That's everything from MTV to CBS. The media giant yanked 100,000 clips off the video site after a revenue-sharing deal fell through. Speculation since has been over where Viacom would go to put its content online. Today, the company announced a deal to license its programming to a company called Juiced. Yeah, Juiced. Ashley Milne-Tite has more.
Juiced is the brainchild of the same pair that unveiled file-sharing service Kazaa and internet telephony success story Skype. The service will be up and running later this year. Juiced is essentially software that will enable you to download and watch entire TV shows on your computer. Anton Denisoff is with the Yankee Group. He says Viacom sees dollar signs in the deal.
It saw its content on YouTube, getting millions and millions of hits, and said, you know, hey, this golden goose is still laying eggs, and we need to cash in.
Viacom and Juiced won't talk about financial details, but Denisoff says they've probably come to an agreement where they'll share ad revenue. Molly Wood of CNET.com says the move comes out of left field.
I think on Viacom's part, actually, it's a very bold move, something pretty unexpected, and I think it's a big risk for them to take.
After all, Juiced is a startup. Still, she says there's real potential for success. For one thing, Juiced's founders inspire a lot of confidence among early adopters. Then it comes down to surfers' ultimate preferences, funny video clips a la YouTube or actual shows.
And so far, there haven't been a lot of full-length television shows online. If Juiced comes out and they are the company that offers all those full-length television shows online, and that turns out to be what people really, really want, then they are going to be very hard to beat.
And she says there are more computer TV watchers than you think. Just turn around on a plane or train and see how many people are catching up on missed shows on their laptops. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Change the light bulb, save the planet. That's the message from the Australian government. Australia is going to become the first country to completely phase out the incandescent light bulb. The government says by replacing the common bulb with energy-efficient compact fluorescents, Australians will cut their greenhouse gas emissions by 4 million tons a year. That's the equivalent of taking more than a million cars off the roads down under. But Sam Eaton reports now from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, there will still be plenty of demand for Thomas Edison's 125-year-old incandescent.
Australia's news is a surprise. The country's conservative prime minister, John Howard, calls himself a climate change realist. But with an election looming and polls lagging, Howard has changed his tune. He says Australia will eliminate the common bulb by 2010 in favor of those funny-looking compact fluorescents, which use less than a quarter of the energy. Daniel Kamen with UC Berkeley's Energy and Resources Group says the plan makes sense.
It's the lowest-hanging fruit. Compact fluorescent light bulbs save a great deal of energy and money. Their payback times can be now very quick. And it opens up a door to do other things.
Like new technologies, John Davenport is CEO of Fiberstars, a U.S. company that sells fiber optic LED lighting. It consumes even less energy than compact fluorescents. But he says without a ban on old-fashioned light bulbs, the new technologies will be slow to catch on.
Most everyone, if the light bulbs work, they'd rather just leave them alone. What this does is force you to rethink the problem.
He says if Australia's phase-out of traditional bulbs goes global, innovation in lighting technology would explode. California is already considering a ban of its own. But David Victor with Stanford's Center for Environmental Science and Policy says a rapid transition could backfire.
If supplies run short, then prices are going to shoot up, and a lot of money will go into the hands of the manufacturers of these alternative light bulbs.
And that means less savings for the consumer. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
When we get there, it'll be the happy music. But a major European investment bank is forecasting a slump in world markets. Dresdner Kleinwort says, according to its Fear and Greed Index, the end is nigh for the bull market. From London Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
The Fear and Greed Index measures the global market's appetite for risk. It compares the price of shares with the price of bonds. When the index is low, fear is the dominant emotion. Investors tread warily. But when it's high, greed is in the driving seat, and no one seems to believe prices can fall. The index says the investment bank has just hit an all-time high, and that means a full-scale slump in riskier assets could be in the offing. Andrew Hilton of the CSFI think tank agrees that financial markets are vulnerable.
There is no doubt that if there were what we call an exogenous shock, something that comes in and from left field and swipes the markets, that a lot of people could be very badly exposed.
But the authors of the Fear and Greed Index do not expect euphoric investors to heed their warning. Said one of them, it'll be about as effective as yelling cliff edge to a thundering herd of lemmings. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Not much fear, a little bit of greed on Wall Street today. Nothing more than usual, though. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Almost 3 years ago, Marketplace started looking into abuses of privately sponsored congressional travel. Lawmakers and Capitol Hill staffers taking trips, sometimes really nice ones, paid for by lobbyists and interest groups. Since then, we've uncovered more than $55 million worth of trips to just about every resort imaginable. So we were paying attention last month when the House and Senate proposed new rules to govern their getaways. The House Ethics Committee announced today exactly how those rules will work. But Marketplace's Steve Henn reports some newly elected leaders in Congress started planning their latest trips before the ink was even dry.
House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer of Maryland is a Democratic power broker. Last year, Hoyer campaigned hard on ethics reforms, and in the wake of several scandals, harangued Republicans in the House.
The greed and flagrant abuses of convicted felons, former Republican member Duke Cunningham and Republican lobbyist Jack Abramoff, hang over this House like a dark cloud.
It was former Majority Leader Tom DeLay's golf trip to Scotland, courtesy of disgraced lobbyist Jack Abramoff, that inspired many recent reforms. Still, that hasn't stopped Congressman Hoyer from planning his own lobbyist-financed springtime getaway. He's headed to the Rio Mar Beach Golf Resort and Spa in Puerto Rico. But Hoyer's golfing trip, scheduled to begin May 2nd, is completely legal because it will be a fundraiser for the Congressman's Political Action Committee, or Leadership PAC. The resort's promotional video sure makes it sound fun.
Whether you're here for business or pleasure, prepare yourself for a sensual awakening.
But it's Hoyer's power in Congress that makes lobbyists quiver.
That's why lobbyists do this.
Joan Claybrook is the president of Public Citizen.
I just don't think that members of Congress should be pulling lobbyists together to do this, even for campaign events.
Despite the Democrats' promise to end lobbyist-financed vacations, there are big loopholes. This is the way the Leadership PAC loophole works. Hoyer's guests give thousands of dollars to his PAC. Because there are few restrictions on how PAC money can be spent, Hoyer's PAC uses some of the cash to pay for the congressman's trip to Puerto Rico. The PAC also provides entertainment, golf, even nifty little gift bags for all the guests. The lobbyists and donors who have supplied the cash for this party then pay their own way to Puerto Rico, and in return for their generosity, they get to golf and hang with the congressman in the Caribbean. Hoyer's PAC has booked 137 rooms for his May event. Lobbyists who didn't want to be named tell us it will be a blast. It may not look good, but it is legal and well within congressional ethics rules.
This is a very convoluted thing that most people will never be able to understand the difference, frankly.
Melanie Sloan is the executive director of the watchdog group Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington.
There's a very big difference between money that is campaign funds spent on travel and other kinds of official travel.
While Tom DeLay's golfing trip to Scotland was supposed to be educational, Hoyer's golfing trip to Puerto Rico is all about money. Lavish campaign fundraising trips rake in cash, which is why these trips were not curtailed when Congress rewrote its ethics rules. Congressman Hoyer and his staff all declined to be interviewed on tape for this story. But even reformers like Joan Claybrook acknowledge that as the second-ranking Democrat in the House, Hoyer is expected to raise enormous amounts of money to defend Democratic congressional seats.
You got to raise money to stay in power. And it's a terrible system, and we abhor it. But that's what we have today.
Hoyer is not the only member of Congress who's raising money this way. But ethics advocate Melanie Sloan says, unlike many others, Hoyer signed a pledge last year promising to change this system, clean up congressional travel, and support publicly financed campaigns.
The Democrats are quite cognizant of the fact that they won the House back in large part on ethics issues, and they know that they have to put their money where their mouths are, and they have to deliver.
If they don't, Sloan predicts they'll have big problems in the next election. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
You know how people personalize their offices or cubicles with random knickknacks or pictures of their kids? Over in the UK, a big company just told its employees they can't do that anymore. No family snapshots or mementos on desks. Too much clutter, the bosses said. Workers grumbled, of course, but commentator Lucy Kellaway says around the office, less is more.
Many of my colleagues surround themselves with photos of their offspring hugging trees, building sandcastles, and making a horrid mess of their baked beans. Why, I've always wondered. I can think of all sorts of reasons for why not. First among these is that I know what my children look like already. Second, I try to keep work and home as separate as possible. I would no more have pictures of my children in the office than I would have pictures of my colleagues at home. More important, I don't want others visiting me at my desk and have to say, "Ah, how old are they?" And I don't need reminding of them, as I'll be seeing them again in a couple of hours. During the Second World War, bomber pilots had pictures of their loved ones in the cockpit so that if trouble struck, they would be the last things they would see before they died. Well, I'm not planning to die before I go home. To understand the phenomenon better, I asked a serious young man what the point was of the 10 baby and toddler snaps he had on his bulletin board. "My children are important to me, and looking at them makes me feel better," he said. But then surely his parents are also important to him, and you never see pictures of parents in employees' cubicles. This may have something to do with the fact that the average 80-year-old is less cute than the average 2-year-old. But there's something else, too, that explains it. The child is a badge, a trophy. When the CEO has a huge framed picture of kids, and wife too if she's attractive, on prominent display, what he's actually saying is, "Look at my gorgeous family. I'm a good guy, really." Really?
Lucy Kellaway is management columnist for the Financial Times. Send us your thoughts on what she had to say or about anything else you hear on the program through our website. It's marketplace.org. Coming up, investing in social costs.
Clients often end up having to come back. It's a hard thing to say. You obviously want to be a good rehab center and cure people. For the bottom line, it's sometimes better if you don't.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials rose 19 points today, more than a tenth of 1%, to close at 12,786. The NASDAQ climbed 16 points, around two-thirds of 1%, to finish at 2513. The S&P 500 edged up 4 points, about a quarter of a percent, to end at 1459. That planned deal for satellite broadcaster Sirius to acquire its rival XM put both stocks into higher orbits today. Sirius was flying almost 6% higher, XM more than 10%. The world's biggest retailer today reported fourth-quarter profits up 9%, beating expectations. Walmart stock got a boost of 3 2/3% on that. Also on the up, British drug company Shire. It said it would buy New River Pharmaceuticals in a deal worth more than $2.5 billion. U.S. listed shares of Shire, you try saying that, shares of Shire, popped up more than 5%. New River stock flowed up more than 8% higher. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Since 1937, managing money with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Web photography for Marketplace is supplied by Getty Images, providing professionals with sports, news, archival, and contemporary images. A report on Marketplace that you just have to share with your friends, family, or coworkers? Help is just a click away. Our website has each day's complete newscast, individual stories, and transcripts, so you can listen again, print them out, or email them to everyone you know. It's all at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up tomorrow. In Washington, the Labor Department releases the Consumer Price Index for January. President Bush tours a hospital and talks about health care initiatives in Chattanooga. And Catholics observe Ash Wednesday, the beginning of the Lenten season of penance. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. It's a far cry from the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, but discount airline JetBlue came out today with its Passenger Bill of Rights. The carrier is trying to bounce back from what CEO David Neeleman calls a mortifying series of events over the past week. Passengers stuck in planes on the ground for 10 or 11 hours and cancellations that fouled up its schedule into today. Bad as it's been for JetBlue, though, it might just as easily have been any other major carrier. Scott McCartney covers aviation for the Wall Street Journal. Scott, thanks for being here.
Good to be with you.
So JetBlue's in the middle of paying what it says is going to be something like $30 million to make sure that this whole debacle never happens again. But there are so many things other than even the weather that are just out of its control entirely.
It's a very complicated dance. And a lot of the problems that we've seen have resulted from policies, from the way that the federal government runs the air traffic control system, the way airports are built and managed, the way gates are controlled at airports.
What's your feeling on the likelihood of any one of those three things being fixed?
There's tremendous pressure building on the industry, and I think airlines should get together through their trade association and have a summit meeting and get the FAA on board and get the airports on board and come up with fixes. I mean, I don't think a passenger bill of rights that's going to compensate you for delays is sort of like a bit of a money-back guarantee like you'd get at a retail store, but that doesn't fix the basic problem here. And the basic problem is that the air travel system that we have today isn't keeping up with demand.
Let's go down the list of items, though. I mean, anybody who has sat at New York's Kennedy Airport or LAX out here in Los Angeles on a busy travel day knows that there just aren't enough gates to go around. They're switching the planes in and out of there like crazy.
That's right. I mean, airlines have been under financial pressure for so long that one way to get more efficient is to schedule your gates, your people, your aircraft, everything you possibly can on as tight a schedule as possible to get as much productivity out. The problem is when bad weather hits, there's no cushion in the schedule to catch up.
With planes as full as they are these days, Scott, I'd imagine there's a huge disincentive for airlines to actually cancel a flight. If you're canceling a plane that's got 25 people on it, it's one thing. But if it's a 747 with 400 people on it, that's a whole lot of money.
Yeah, especially at holiday periods when, you know, it may be days before people can get out. Because there is no slack in the system, it's very difficult. I do think that it is better to give people the choice to cancel a flight and let them make a choice of whether they want to make the trip or not, whether they want to get on a train, whether they want to rent a car and drive, whether they want to try another airline. There are lots of ways to get to where you're going. But if the airline keeps you trapped on an airplane for 8 hours, you have no options.
Somebody's got to be in charge, though, right? It's got to be either the FAA in charge with its rules and regulations, it's an airline in charge with its policy, or it's the captain of the airplane in charge, and he's able to taxi back to a gate.
Well, that's one of the huge problems. You mentioned three players. They're all in charge, and yet nobody's in charge. The captain is in charge of the aircraft, but the captain can't take off without permission from the FAA. Captain can't go back to a gate without permission from the company. There are lots of restrictions on what the captain can do, just as there are lots of restrictions on what the other guys can do.
Scott, how much of this do you think is related to what's going on in aviation writ large? That is, falling profits, consolidation, passenger discontent.
Airlines have to work with the infrastructure that we have, and it's just not adequate to meet all the need. There are some warning signs. It's interesting to note that JetBlue last year, of the 10 biggest airlines, it was worst of the 10 in terms of on-time performance. It's really struggled with its operation really for 2 years now, because it hasn't had adequate resources, because it's introduced a new aircraft into its fleet. So like a lot of things, there were warning signs here that there were problems with the JetBlue operation, and when that storm hit, it all snowballed.
Scott McCartney is a travel editor for the Wall Street Journal. Scott, good to talk to you.
Great to be with you, Kai.
Even if you didn't click on the link out of some sense of being above that kind of news, you probably saw the headline over the weekend that Britney Spears shaved her head. No comment so far from the singer as to why she did it, but we got some insight today. Her publicist confirmed she's checked herself into a rehabilitation facility here in Los Angeles. Drug and alcohol rehab centers are seeing more and more business lately, not just from celebs abusing their fame and fortune, but from everyday folk. And private equity investment groups have surely taken notice. From WBUR in Boston, Monica Brady-Myrov has more.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Learn to Cope. Learn to Cope is a support group created by parents for parents dealing with the current opiate crisis and the effect it has had.
Every Monday, this support group meets to swap horror stories about heroin addiction. Mary DeRamo's 23-year-old daughter has been shooting up for 3 years.
One time, when we found her blue with the needle in her arm, in our home, did CPR on her. After that, we sent her to the $14,000 upstate New York place for 6 weeks because we were desperate.
These are middle to upper class families from the suburbs of Boston who can afford to pay out of pocket what insurance doesn't cover. And insurance companies don't cover much in the way of drug treatment. The government pays for the majority of treatment. That's why private equity is jumping in. It's a growth business aimed at the middle and upper classes.
It is the type of deal that a private equity firm likes.
Dan Primack writes about private equity for Thomson Financial.
You've got underlying assets in the sense of both real estate and equipment. You have really kind of a never-ending supply of customers. You know, this isn't a technology or a software play where, you know, the customers might move on to something new. There isn't something new. This is rehab.
An estimated 22 million Americans are addicted to drugs or alcohol, and the problem is growing. The chemical dependency industry is worth about $12 billion a year. And on average, 35% of people who've been through a short-term detox for heroin relapse within 3 months. That's good for business, says Primack.
Clients often end up having to come back. They're, you know, it's a hard thing to say. You obviously want to be a good rehab center and cure people. For the bottom line, it's sometimes better if you don't.
In 2004, there were 10 private equity deals, 2005, 15, and 9 last year. One of the players is Bain Capital. The Boston-based private equity firm bought CRC Health Group of California for $723 million last year. CRC is the nation's largest provider of drug and alcohol treatment services. Dr. Barry Carlin, head of CRC, doesn't apologize for making money off drug addicts because he says addiction is a chronic disease.
So the idea that, you know, we're making money off people who have that, you know, who of alcoholism and drug abuse, you know, is an absurdity. That's like saying you can't make money off a person by treating a person with diabetes or, you know, or cancer.
Carlin says traditionally investors have shunned drug addiction as a problem society would rather sweep under the rug. Private equity is legitimizing the rehab business and giving centers like his better status in Washington policy circles.
It really upgrades the whole industry. It's a statement from someone like Bain that this is an important industry. It's an industry that warrants investment from our society. And so from our perspective, it's been a tremendous boon.
Bain Capital says their investment is increasing access to treatment, and CRC needs Bain's money to expand facilities to meet the growing need. An estimated 18.5 million people are chemically dependent but not yet getting treatment. In Boston, I'm Monica Brady-Meyerov for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years, with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note, the day's business news is never done. Hewlett-Packard reported its first quarter profits after the bell today, up 26% thanks to its printer and personal computing divisions. If you're looking for something a little easier to get a handle on, try this. Earnings were just over $1.5 billion. Revenue was up. Sales were up. Share price is up 4% so far this year as well. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow rose 19 points, more than a tenth of 1%. The Nasdaq skipped up 16 points, about two-thirds of 1%. The S&P 500 gained 4 points, just over 0.25% there. Thanks to Brian Watt and Miguel Macias on our Morning Report crew. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by Wendy Sykes. Next time on this program, shopping for just the right spouse.
A lot of my girlfriends are single, unless they're willing to totally discount the social situation and go in with the C guys. But it's very rare for the A girls to go out with C guys.
Just like high school all over again. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.